Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with tap to pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone. So Money episode 846, David Burns, founder of the business Monk.
You're listening to So Money with award-winning money guru Farnoosh Torabi. Each day, get a 30-minute dose of financial inspiration from the world's top business minds, authors, influencers, and from Farnoosh herself. Looking for ways to save on gas or double your double coupons? Sorry, you're in the wrong place. Seeking profound ways to live a richer, happier life? Welcome to So Money.
It is actually a silly thing to focus a lot on money, because money does nothing on its own. By its nature, it points outside of itself. It's only good in as much as you can use it for other things.
We're getting philosophical, financially philosophical on the show today. Welcome to So Money. I'm your host, Farnoosh Torabi. Our guest is David Burns, founder of The Business Monk. Two words I never thought I'd say together, but there you go. David is convinced you can pursue business and have it become a path to spiritual awakening. I like the sound of that. Through his work as a coach and consultant, David helps entrepreneurs and CEOs learn to stop working themselves to death. He teaches his clients how to replace false beliefs, manifest money, stop repeating bad habits, and pursue more depth in their personal relationships. Gotta say, we're lucky because we're getting David all to ourselves to learn from his playbook here in the next 30 minutes. Here we go. Here's David Burns. David Burns, welcome to So Money.
Thank you.
All right. Let's just dive right into this concept of business monk, which you have concepted. And it is thebusinessmonk.com is where you have your online presence. And just to let listeners in on the definition of business monk, it's a noun. It's somebody who engages in business as a path to spiritual awakening. Sounds like you can't put business and monk in the same phrase, but you have. Give us a little bit more background into how you arrived at this concept and how it really works in action.
Yeah, happily. I'll say first, you know, that definition of a business monk, which I sometimes use, I do believe in, you know, using business as a vehicle to spiritual awakening. And spiritual awakening is a very vague and sort of charged term. So sometimes it's easier to talk about as something like engaging in business as a mindfulness practice. And as more and more research comes out on the benefits of more traditional mindfulness practices, the sort of foundational mission of our company is to give people the tools and the frameworks to derive the same benefits that they would from a more formal, intense, monastic meditative practice while engaged in business, so that there's no real separation between mindfulness and day-to-day work.
Do you have to meditate to be a business monk? Do you have to meditate while entrepreneuring?
You know, it certainly doesn't hurt, but the whole idea behind our company is that not only do very few people on the intense path, go and study at a genuine monastery. Like very few people have the bandwidth or the desire to immerse in mindfulness mm-hmm. at that level. But also a lot of people struggle with just maintaining a simple daily 15-minute meditative practice, even with useful tools like Headspace. So the whole idea is no, actually, you don't have to engage in formal meditative practice, though obviously it does have enormous benefits to do that as well. You can instead relate day-to-day with work tasks, with business broadly, whether you're an entrepreneur or have a more traditional position, as a meditative substitute.
Initially, you found business to be sort of irritating, I read. You know, that was part of your seeking journey as you were trying to sort of figure out your path to enlightenment. I'm curious about the backstory here too, like your personal backstory. What sort of void did this fill in your life? Like, what was the aha moment?
Yeah, well, the question of what void exactly it filled is a deep one. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to answer that thoroughly or accurately, but I'll say I've been a seeker, you know, sort of for as long as I can remember, often unhealthily so. You know, I the impulse to kind of seek out more and richer experience from this life has been with me for a really long time. And it started out, you know, with fiction, exploring fiction as a kid and kind of losing myself in these fictional realms. And then it turned into drugs and alcohol. I was a pretty hardcore drug addict starting in high school, through all of college, on and off. And during that time, I'd explored a variety of different spiritual modalities, some just to seek and then some also to help with the drug addiction. And when I graduated and I continued this pursuit of seeking, of practicing multiple different meditative modalities, reading, going to different classes, I'll say the first thing that actually there was kind of a precursor to the business monk path for me, mm-hmm. which was in broad terms, it was the practice of conscious relating, or some people call it sacred intimacy, but starting to approach relationship, romantic relationship, but also just other relationships in one's life as meditative practice, as a practice to open and access a certain depth of fulfillment in this life on a day-to-day. And so that was sort of the first thing that I'll say really worked for me in the meditative realm. Like it provided a certain kind of answer to this question of like, how do you be in the world and also experience great serenity and fulfillment? And bringing a lot of consciousness to relationships sort of worked for me. But in the process of that, you know, I needed to get a job, and I was kind of scraping by, paying the bills, playing cello, doing some recordings and tutoring. And when I got, it wasn't quite working. So when I got my first job, actually doing production for events, I had this very striking experience that just continued deepening of the act of business, of working on a day-to-day, providing, when I approached it the right way, exactly the same kind of deepening fulfillment and serenity as all of the meditative practices I'd been exploring were supposed to do. And so I took a few different jobs and eventually started a couple of different businesses, like a marketing firm, actually became a relationship and intimacy coach. And then there came a time when there was my partner and I had a tough month, not financially, just in our life personally. There were some deaths and one of us went to the hospital. It was one of those months that has you kind of look at everything that's going on and seriously consider what genuinely matters. And I realized what mattered most to me was this thread of fulfillment and serenity by engaging in business consciously and deliberately as meditative practice throughout all of the different ventures. And so I sold my stake in my businesses to my business partner, and I started the Business Monk to just focus on spreading those practices and that mission full time.
I really appreciate the intention here, where you're often, when we think about entrepreneurship, starting a business, pursuit of business, it is pitched to the world as sort of this zero sum game. You have to be in it to win it, all or nothing. The hustle is real. You know, you can sleep when you die. Like, you got to put all your eggs in this basket. Right. And I mean, I don't have to tell you who's giving us those messages, but they're very much out there, loud and clear. And it's like, if you really want to be an entrepreneur, you have to give it, like, it's almost like you have to become a slave to this mission of becoming successful. And you said to that, that's BS. That's actually not healthy. And you found your path, which now you're teaching to clients and everybody who follows you at the Business Monk. But really, what do you think about that message that you often hear, you know, on Instagram and social media and YouTube? And there are many thought leaders that do have this this belief system around entrepreneurship, which is all about the grind, the hustle, the work 24/7. Is that healthy?
I mean, I personally, to be honest, is definitely something I did. Actually, even before I was an entrepreneur, when I got my first sales job, I was working, you know, 16 to 18 hours a day. I was really big. I was an avid believer in the hustle narrative of the work culture, which we're all very familiar with. And even when I started my own ventures, I launched into this exactly the same kind of behavior. And I'll say, you know, obviously, I think a lot of people are coming to understand that it's not particularly healthy to hold that attitude exclusively. And to me, it was very appealing. And I think the reason why it's out there is it actually does resonate with a lot of people, and it appeals to a certain kind of underlying passion or drive that in a lot of people is sort of lying dormant. They can get activated by entrepreneurship and using models like the, you know, the grind and hustle approach. And it's interesting. Some of the, I experience this myself, and I also experience it regularly with certain kinds of one-on-one clients. Cause I do a lot of executive coaching work. Like, people who have sort of the hustle bug, which I do think is a kind of virus, but you have it, you can't just stop it. Like, if that sort of language really appeals to you, it's appealing to something deep. It's appealing to this certain depth of ambition that's a very, very fundamental human drive. And so rather than simply trying to help people develop a healthier balance in life, I think that is important for a variety of reasons, not just for peace of mind, but also because you do function a lot better if you maintain some level of balance. And you're getting sleep and taking breaks from work. Like, you're more able to enter into real flow state and be as optimally productive as possible. But it's not just about helping people find health. It's about helping them relate internally to that often very deep and burning ambition in a way that it doesn't consume you, but can instead be a sort of effortless fuel for service and creating the life that you really want.
That's a great promise. Also, love that you're calling it the hustle virus. I think that's really a pretty great characterization. David, you know, a part of your work with your clients who are entrepreneurs and business leaders is to help them replace a lot of false belief systems. And I think when it comes to money, which is a huge aspect to your success as an entrepreneur, right, is making the money and having the money work for the business. What would you say with respect to people who have a lot of mindset traps or false belief systems around money with using this Business Monk framework?
Yeah, I mean, we're getting into some really juicy terrain. I have a lot to say about this, and I'll just say I don't believe that this is a simple area to talk about or work on. Like, I don't actually think that there's a single simple solution to overcoming all of the various mindset traps that exist around money. Money's complicated, money's very charged. We grew up with a lot of different beliefs around them, depending on the person. And I'll say one of my own kind of frustrations with entering into the entrepreneurial realm and starting to do really intense personal work on money mindset was that I got a lot of advice that was sort of one size fits all and a little bit simplistic that didn't quite work for me with regard to changing those things. So that is just like an overall kind of caveat. I'm going to say what I believe about this, but I very much believe that unwinding one's own sort of money karma is a very personal path. So broadly, there's one of the first things that people usually talk about with struggling with money mindset is a sense of worth or value. And being an entrepreneur particularly can be amazing medicine for that sort of, for the sickness of low self-worth. If you charge enough and set up clear boundaries with clients, maybe gradually raise rates for the services that you can do. I've seen some amazing internal psychological growth in people's own sense of worth and confidence just by charging slightly more than they're comfortable with and experiencing the okayness of that over and over. And there's a real limit to that kind of growth, because if you're utilizing money and charging more, we'll say, if you're using that to increase your own sense of worth, then you're still tying money to a sense of worth. So it has a short-term benefit, but ultimately it's still grounded in a mistaken belief, which is that your worth as a human being has anything to do with the amount of money that you make. So often, like, one of the more common sort of patterns I see in people that I work with one-on-one or in group programs is they'll start out as an entrepreneur. They'll have some kind of insecurity or self-worth challenge. They'll do deliberate money practices like charging, for instance, slightly more than they're comfortable with in a way that still feels an integrity. And their sense of worth will bloom slightly. And then they have to do the work from there of totally detaching their sense of identity and worth from the amount of money that they're making, so that things can reach the next level.
That makes sense. How would you describe your financial philosophy today? Let's turn the dial to a little bit more personal now.
Yeah.
And I know you have a lot of caveats and there, you could still be in the process of your own money journey, but right now, today, how would you characterize your money perspective on, you can choose business, you can choose life in general?
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, my real money perspective is that money is complicated. And as a result, it's an incredible teacher. Like, the amount of growth and mindset development that can result from starting to relate to money very deliberately is really astonishing. It's a huge part of my path has been that. And there's a couple of ways that it does that are really important to me on a personal level. I'll say, I got better at making money before I got better at managing money. So, you know, the early parts of my entrepreneurial journey were characterized by progressively larger spikes in income, but no real shift in the experience of money being a source of anxiety. Because I had no idea how to manage it. You know, I put it silly places and didn't track spending. So the first kind of growth of money mindset for me was around making it, but that wasn't at all sufficient. So I'll say it's very easy with money, and I've fallen into this trap repeatedly, to attach one's sense of financial health to the amount of money that you're making or have. That's a tiny, tiny sliver of financial health. You could be making a ton of money. And I've done, I was having six-figure months while I was still just wildly irresponsible with money. And my experience of it was not particularly happier than back in the day when I could barely make like $3,000 a month. So I'll say the sort of overarching belief system that I have today around money is, like everything, our happiness in relationship to it needs to be based in mindfulness and consciousness. Part of that is connected to making money, but a huge part of that is connected to managing it. And it's a skill set, the management of it is a skill set that very few of us are taught early on.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
You want to know what's worse than shopping for jeans? Shopping for bras. It's never been fun for me until Third Love came into my life. Third Love was launched to take all the frustration, ick, and ugh out of bra shopping. They make solutions for every bra problem, aka problems. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen probably since high school and have straps that actually stay put. Third Love's bras are designed at their headquarters in San Francisco, and they're made from premium materials. They put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before they're given the stamp of approval. And whether you're a AA or an H cup, their virtual fitting room can help find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups, so long feeling stuck between two cup sizes that just don't fit. It's time to get your problems solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get $15 off your order with the code podcast15. That's thirdlove.com to get $15 off your order with the code podcast15.
I think that's everybody, right? You make the money, and then you make a lot of mistakes with it, and then you learn, and then hopefully you can still make the money to now catch up with the learning.
Right.
Spoken like a true expert. Let's move on to your money resolution. This question brought to us by our sponsor, Chase. Do you have like goals or resolutions that you make every year, and specifically around money? Do you have one this year?
I make goals and resolutions quarterly rather than annually. I have a much easier time. I used to just not make any resolutions and live very day to day. And now that I have a little company and people I'm responsible for, then I've extended it to 3 months. But I'm a big fan of kind of restricting the time length on goal setting and resolutions to allow for the sort of agility and flexibility of responding to the real time evolution of a business that's inevitable. So I do have some resolutions right now and some specific goals for our business. Some of them are financial, like we have a couple of new financial targets for this quarter. But the two really huge ones are one, the establishment of passive recurring revenue, which we're doing through online courses. And the second is the eradication of all unnecessary expenditures for the business, which is really a challenge for me because I lean in the direction of kind of looseness and generosity when it comes to cash. And so having like making the difficult decisions about who to cut, who to keep, and where we can place the money that's genuinely the highest leverage for our mission. That's the kind of work that I'm currently engaged in that realm.
How did you grow up, David? And, how did your upbringing impact the lens through which you see the money world?
You know, I have to say my parents were sort of great about money in a lot of ways. Like, of course there was financial stress in the household. Like I grew up lower middle class. But there weren't really a lot of fights about money. And there weren't a ton of the sort of negative beliefs about it that some people grow up with. The one that I've had to work on the most, I would say, is my family is one of academics, and so there was a very high value placed on kind of intellectual development, and so there was a sense of contempt attached to people who focused on money. People who were just like full time business people. And so for a while in the entrepreneurial path, every time that I would make money or start focusing on money, I had this sort of sense of guilt or shame that would inevitably arise that I somehow wasn't focusing on the most important things. And while I've worked through that belief to a great extent, I also think there's a real wisdom to it. Like a lot of the false beliefs around money, you know, that one that I grew up with and a lot of the other ones people have, they have a certain seed of wisdom in them. And like with that one, the seed of wisdom is it is actually a silly thing to focus a lot on money because money does nothing on its own. It by its nature, it points outside of itself. It's only good in as much as you can use it for other things. So to get really kind of myopically focused on the substance itself is kind of missing the point. There's abuses to having contempt for money making, but I think at the core, that's the seed of it. And that's the wisdom of that old false belief is something that I've done my best to integrate.
I like that. I'm actually writing down the time code for that because that's going to be my opening quote from you. I think, you know, focusing so much on the money is sort of missing the point, right? You have to sort of take a step back and first realize what is the life that I want and what is that life, what price tag does that carry, you know, and then working your way backwards to be able to, you know, earn that money in a way that feels right to you to be able to support that lifestyle. So many nuggets that you're giving me. I didn't think this was going to be such a like deep financial conversation, but here we are really going deeper than I have in many months, I will say.
I'm down to talk about money for as long as you want.
I predict that this comes up quite a bit in your practice working with your clients. And we did touch on this earlier, you know, just about some of the ways that you coach around these money mindset traps. But would you say that money is the number one booby trap like that people fall into, particularly people who are looking to like start businesses and be entrepreneurial, that is sometimes the biggest area that needs work, mindset work?
Yes. 100%, but it happens in a couple of different ways. It's I think more common that people get excessively focused on the financial aspect of the business that they're running, and that detract attention just through opportunity cost on what actually matters in the business, on refining really, really beautiful services and products, things like that, overall mission. But there's a type of person who I occasionally encounter, and this is sort of more what I was like during many entrepreneurial phases, who you could say has really grand ideas about what's possible, different sorts of business ideas. And this is especially people who dream of starting startups, and this I think is facilitated by kind of Silicon Valley's massive, massive venture capital culture. Mm-hmm. People sort of lose connection to the fact that what a business is something that generates profit. And even if it's an incredible, incredible idea, it's not a real one if it's not connected to that possibility somewhere down the line. And ideally, not very far down the line unless you have a ton of funding.
Oh, man. I love that because I have been saying this all along and no one's listening. It's like, I don't care that company X got $1 million, $2 million, $100 million in seed funding or venture capital. Like, what's the profit?
Right.
Are they making money? I think that's a great show of a vote of confidence. And like, clearly if people are investing in you, that's incredible. That's definitely a mark of progress. But I don't think that it deserves all of the celebration that the media gives it, that the entrepreneurial world gives it. I think that we often see that when you overextend yourself with, you know, angel investing or venture capital, that it's so hard to keep up, that one of two things has to happen. You either have to sell out quickly because you have to pay back your investors, or you go bankrupt because you have run your course with that money and now they want to get paid back and you're not able to and you haven't made a profit. And so
100%.
There's definitely something to be said with like growing a little bit slower, bootstrapping it. And that's not a sexy headline. There aren't Inc. magazines aren't running articles that's like, you know, right. Like that's, you know, sock company grows slow but steady.
Right. Yeah. 100%.
Becomes a $1 billion company over 30 years, but you know what? Is still in business and hasn't laid off anybody.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's not the sexiest tagline.
No. Anyway, I digress, but I really appreciate that you said that because it really, I mean, I feel like, it's, you know, it's just, it's very practical to me. And sometimes, you know, practical stuff, it doesn't really stick, but it's nice to know that someone like you who's so experienced and really has this, your ear to the ground can also agree to that. All right. Let's do some So Money fill in the blanks, Dave. Dave or David? I've been calling you Dave.
Both. Yeah. Okay. Both work.
Let's do some So Money fill in the blanks. This is when I start a sentence and then you just finish it. It's supposed to be stream of consciousness. So don't try to overthink it or think you have like the wrong answer. People like really get nervous sometimes.
I mean, there's a chance that what I'll say will make no sense, but that's sort of the point.
That's fine. It's okay. All right. First things first. If I won the lottery tomorrow, the first thing I would do is.
Oh man. This is funny. I think about versions of this a lot because my company sort of works by winning the lottery regularly. We don't have our entire life is one of massive spikes of income and then a long period of quiet. So I'm sort of used to winning the lottery on a smaller scale. So what I would actually do, and this answer has changed a lot since a couple of years ago, what I would actually do is talk to our COO and CFO and discuss the most optimal the most optimal division of those funds for the sake of our current mission. I would also immediately celebrate and go out to eat oysters because that's a tradition, but I would actively practice financial responsibility in connection to the people who know what's going on in my business.
Yeah. A lot of oysters. That would definitely be a good party to go to. One thing that I spend on that makes my life easier or better is
tea. Really, really good tea, especially from, there's a nonprofit Global Tea Hut with some incredible living tea selections, but Pu'er and Oolong.
And, where are you based?
Say it again.
Where are you based out of? Is there a lot
based
of
based in Los Angeles.
Los Angeles. Okay. I was going to say in San Francisco, there's this great tea place.
Oh, there's a couple of amazing tea houses in San Francisco. And in LA, we have one. But yeah, tea has just in terms of ROI has like actually one of the highest in terms of general, like not only productivity I have, but on my quality of marriage and
really?
My mind throughout the day. Yeah, 100%.
You need to go out more with that message. I think that's a profitable message.
That was,
people don't know the benefits of tea.
Like, well, the best thing that my wife and I do is drink three cups of tea. We have a little tea ceremony in the mornings and it sets an incredible tone for the whole day. And it's this
beautiful.
Wow.
You need to, have you written about this?
I have. Yeah, there's one article.
Okay, I'm going to look this up. This is pretty, you know, I'm Iranian. So we drink tea like 14 times a day.
Oh, great.
I don't, but my parents do. And I've, you know, I get into the, when they're here, we do it. But like, for me, it's coffee, but I know tea has so many benefits. It's
absolutely.
It's pretty incredible. Okay. When I was growing up, the one thing I wish I had learned about money is.
Oh, spreadsheets. 100%.
Yeah. You think you would have even gotten that though, at like 11 years old? Like, I don't think I would have really cared about seeing spreadsheets at 11.
You know, I think it's a hard sell to an 11-year-old, but if I could have somehow convinced myself to learn about spreadsheets, like the road of trying to manage finances without a spreadsheet is just so insane. It's like, it's just possible. Like, you know, it's like trying to win a bicycle race while
that's
running.
That's half of what being a CFO is. It's just excelling. The Excel spreadsheet is basically your job description, mastering that. All right. And last but not least, I'm David Burns. I'm So Money because.
Oh, because especially today and in our culture, it is one of the greatest teachers for mindfulness and deliberate living that we have.
David Burns, thank you so much. I really appreciate you coming on the show. So much to think about. And I love how you are, you know, living your life in such alignment and helping others who are trying to achieve business euphoria get there.
I'm going to steal that phrase. I love that.
Business euphoria. Business monk is so much better though. But yeah, you can definitely steal any of my language. You're welcome. It's not stealing. It's
been a
gift. I'm gifting it to you. You've been such a gift for us. Thank you so much. And I'm wishing you and your family a happy 2019.
Oh, back at you.
learn more about David, check out thebusinessmonk.com. If you missed any of this, just head over to somoneypodcast.com. You can download the transcript, hear the audio, and also click on Ask Farnoosh and leave me your question for our Friday episodes. You can also follow me on Instagram at Farnoosh Tarabi. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Hope your day is so money. Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with Tap to Pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.